When you're looking for more and there's no place to go, it's a sequels only bonus show. It's not about sequels this time, you know, it's a sequels only bonus show. Doug and his pals, well, they know what to do. Talking about movies without a part two. Looking for more and there's no place to go, it's a sequels only bonus show. Talking to stars with Doug Ditsold, it's a sequels only bonus show. Sequels only bonus show.
Hey there, Doug here. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying safe. Happy Monday. We know Mondays suck, but we have an amazing bonus interview for you to start that week off right. It is with actor and improviser Jonathan Mangum. You know him, obviously. Right now, he's on the hit game show Deal or No Deal with his buddy Wayne Brady. So we talked about how they met early on in Jonathan's improv career, which I'm a huge improv fan. So it's so great to be able to pick his brain about how he started, his process. Then we talked about other shows he was on over the years, some amazing, like he had a role in Married with Children, and so much more. And we also talked about a film that he talked to me about last year that finally came out. It's on YouTube. I'll put the link in the notes. It's called A Patient Man. It's a serious role, and he talks about how he never had an opportunity to do that, but he finally did. So check that out. It was great. And without further ado, I'm going to shut my yapper and I'm going to put all his links in the notes. He also hosts I can't start the interview without telling you about his game show that he hosts that's exclusive. It's on Facebook. It's called You Jokes. He finds two improvisers to go head to head. And then you are involved in the comment section as a viewer, and he gives you a chance to join in on all the fun. So here is Jonathan Mangum. Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Of course, man.
Cool, man. So with these, I know you're a busy guy. So what we do, we typically reach out to people, obviously people we admire and that we enjoy watching and listening to. And we cover movie sequels for the most part. And I know you're a couple of them. But yeah, so what we like to do with these, because movies, they always have good stories, just like anything that's enjoyable. So yeah. Where does your story begin? Where'd you grow up?
Okay. Geez. I grew up in Mobile, Alabama.
Really?
It's very far away from California. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was born in Charleston, South Carolina, and kind of family moved around a bunch, but we hit Mobile right around when I was in second grade. And so went to school from there all the way through high school. Had a great time, actually. People go, really? Alabama?
I'm sure that there's parts of the South that, you know, everybody has great experiences, but at what point were you thinking about, you know, show business or getting into acting?
So, yeah, I did plays in high school, but it just seemed like acting just seemed like something that was an impossible thing that people did that I had no idea about it. So I didn't even consider it. I went to college my first year at Louisiana State University for engineering as an engineer major, and did not perform well. But while there, I heard about this thing at Disney World in Orlando called the Disney College Program. So you go to Disney World, you live in this big apartment with a bunch of students during the summer, you work at the theme park, and then you take like Disney marketing and business classes in the evening for credit towards your college. So I went and did that, and I was just like, this is great. This is so much better than engineering, you know, entertainment. So I, you know, called my mom. I said, hey, I'm not going back to college at LSU. I'm going to stay in Orlando. And that's kind of the start of it, when I saw that it was possible to be involved in entertainment.
Wow. So is that program going there for that? My buddy did it probably in the mid 2000s. So what was it? It was just over the summer for a couple months.
Yeah. You go there for the summer and you get a job. You tell them what you like, what kind of stuff you want to do. And they gave me the backstage tour at the time it was called the Disney MGM Studios. I don't know. I think they changed the name now to just Disney Studios. But so I was in the tram and telling people, you know, there's the wardrobe that Michael Jackson wore in his Thriller video. And there's the car from Back to the Future. And they're just pointing stuff out. And it was pretty cool.
Was it cool to the fact, like, obviously you said you did plays in high school, but it's like these people are paying to be at a theme park and it's like all eyes on me, like that feeling like doing improv or being on stage?
Yeah, it was kind of like that. I mean, it wasn't a full performance because you were sitting at the front of a cabin with a microphone. But yeah, it was nice to be able to talk, which I was kind of good at, as opposed to determining the area of a field. It was like the civil engineering class that I just could not. Everyone got the right answer except for me over and over again. I just could not measure the damn field with that little thing they call a transit. You peer through one end and look at their Earth's curvature and then figure out the area. I just couldn't do it. It just was impossible for me to do.
Thinking back right now, where you're at right now, could you imagine doing that? Because even you explaining it, it's even like I was lost.
No, I don't know. And people do it and they make buildings and stuff. I've been in buildings. They look cool, but I can't do that stuff, man.
So what was the next step in getting to that? Was it, so you're in Orlando.
So I'm in Orlando. I'm working at Disney and the summer's over and I go, I'm going to stay in Orlando. So I go, well, I have to get a college degree because, you know, that's what people do. So I signed up, at a college there called Valencia Community College. And while I was doing that, I discovered this thing called Comedy Sports, which was this improv show. Are you familiar with Comedy Sports at all?
They actually just did something in my, I live in Jersey, so I'm not too far from New York City, but I know that's where Jason Sudeikis started in Kansas City, but I know that's pretty awesome. So you found that.
Yeah. I saw this show. I've never seen anything like it. I was like, this is the greatest.
Oh yeah.
I can't believe they made it all up. And I think I was like probably 19 at the time. So I said, I want to take classes. And I started taking classes and, you know, Comedy Sports is very, a lot of improv schools nowadays, you know, you go through 3 or 4 levels of classes before you can even ever get on the stage with their B group. But Comedy Sports is like, 2 weeks, you're good. they throw you on stage in 2 weeks and you're just horrified, but you're doing it. And so that's kind of where it started, the actual performing thing.
Yeah, I did 2 levels at a place out in Portland. But yeah, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah. That's the best. I mean, that's the best. I tell people now, it's like, how do I get good? And just do it. Find a group where you actually can be on stage and just be horrible for a long time and then you'll get good at it.
That's cool. So how long before, I'm sure pretty soon after that, obviously, I know you say it as in, hey, they just threw me on stage, which they might have done with some people, but obviously somebody saw something in you. How long until you were on like the house team?
Well, so that there was only the house team, right?
Oh, that's
there,
all they
there
had.
Weren't,
okay.
Yeah. It was, we performed in the upstairs at a Pizza Hut in downtown Orlando. And after about like 3 or 4 months, I started, you know, thought it wasn't great, but I was getting good laughs. And somebody from a competing group called Theater Sports, which is just like Comedy Sports without the pajamas, down the street, they were doing shows and they had like a 200 seat theater and they were doing like 3 shows on Friday and 3 on Saturday. So one of those guys came and saw me, said, hey, why don't you come over here to Theater Sports where it's much more awesome. And I did. And that's where I met Wayne Brady. And that's where I really started doing a lot of improv. And then the group from SAC Theater in Orlando, the 7 of us eventually would all move together out to Los Angeles.
That's pretty cool.
As a group. Yeah.
To have that support system. So how old, so you and Wayne, so it's still the same, right around the same time. So you're still 19.
Yeah.
20?
Yeah, I was 19, met Wayne, he was a teenager too.
Wow.
And we were doing, it ended up after about a year, we were both doing about 13 shows a week.
Damn.
Because there were 3 on Friday, 3 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. And I started making enough money where I'm like, oh, I can make a living doing this. I mean, it wasn't a lot of money, but to a 20-year-old that lives in an apartment with no responsibility, I think I was making $400 a week. I'm like, this is it. I'm set. I'll just do this forever.
Was it saturated then? So what year is this? The mid 90s?
This is 92, okay. I think 91, 92, somewhere in there.
Improv was still probably like, did you even hear anything about that besides maybe something you saw on TV, like growing up in Mobile?
So no, I had never heard of improv ever.
Okay.
And so I hadn't even seen Whose Line Is Anyway yet. And I just went to this show and just saw them making this stuff up and being hilarious. And I just was like, what is this magic? I must do this.
So that's cool. So you go out to LA.
Yep.
And what were you doing out there? Just jumping right into the improv scene there?
So no. So that group moved out to LA. And we were called the House Full of Honkies, which was funny when Wayne was in the group, and when Wayne eventually left, it just got really weird to be called the House Full of Honkies. Like, well, that's exactly what you are. There's no irony anymore. So we, as a group, performed quite a bit in town, and this is kind of before the current version of improv that has hit LA and New York. I'm not sure about other places where, like, you know, at UCB, there's six teams that go on every night of the week, right?
Yeah.
This is back before then, where it wasn't, theaters weren't based on their students' income for the theater. It was based, we were just doing shows and selling tickets and filling those up without students, which was really cool and hard to do in LA, frankly.
I bet. What theater were you performing at?
We did a couple different theaters. We were at the Acme Theater, which was on La Brea. Which has closed, but we were there for a while. We started off at a place called Acapella in North Hollywood, which was during the day, it was a bizarre swap meet type like junk store. And then in the evening after 10, it became a club for cross dressers to hang out, but not the pretty ones, right? And so in between 7 and 10, they would do a little comedy, and they had dirty, filthy couches in front of a stage, and we would get on the stage and do our show and then leave.
That's amazing.
And people would pay to sit on those filthy couches.
Wow.
I don't know what was on or in those couches, and they were horrible, but people sat there and paid for us to do the funny. Sometimes though, it's cool though. I mean, like, I've been to shows, I'm sure you have too, where you find some show that's just down some path and behind a thing, and
there's
a bunch of people packed in, and it's a dirty, weird place, but because it's like you found this thing, it's so cool to watch because like no one else knows about it. So I felt like we were kind of like that for a little while here.
And sometimes people enjoy that more. And then maybe if the same people saw you, it's such a bad mindset to have, but it's like a lot of times with bands, it's like, oh, there's such a sellout. When I saw them in the 50-seat bar, they were so much better. But they're the same bar.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that's cool that for 3 hours, you had people that came to this grungy place. But since you guys were bringing it, and especially that you worked together, it's like a year.
Yeah.
And that's what's big about improv and, you know, things that you've done and being on Whose Line. All these people know, they trust each other. That's like the biggest thing with it.
Yep. Sure. Of course. Yeah. We were a super tight knit group. I mean, we knew what everyone's strengths and weaknesses were, and we kind of acted like one team as opposed to a bunch of funny people.
And that's what's important. So
yep.
The first thing on your IMDb, when you started to foray into acting, was you were on Calusa Explains It All.
Yeah. So that was in Orlando before we moved.
That was they filmed that there?
Yeah. Yeah. So Orlando kind of had a little bit of a, maybe this will be a place to do stuff back in the 90s. So Nickelodeon Studios was there and a couple others. So I did an episode of Clarissa there. I did an episode of Sequest, which shot some of its later seasons there. And then because of that, I got my SAG card. And so once I got my SAG card, I went, okay, I can go to LA now because I have this thing that you need to work. So that was probably in the year before I moved out to LA.
So one thing that I thought was really cool on there was, cause I was a huge fan. Like, my dad loved football and just no matter what was, he would always watch Married with Children. Whenever it was reruns all the time. And how cool was that? Were you a fan of that show before you were on it?
I was, and I couldn't believe, cause I think I was on season 8 or 9. It was near the end of their run. So I think I was like 20, 5 when, so I had been like, I watched that show in high school before I even thought of being an actor. And then here I am standing on the set and there's Ed O'Neill and Christina Applegate was like the hottest chick that we'd talk about in high school. Like, oh, she's so hot. And then I'm standing 2 feet from her. I'm just like, this is so weird.
And not even that, not even you're just on it. You were Hal. So you were like,
yeah, playing, I played like, young Hal.
Yeah, which was so funny. I just watched it before because I interviewed Larry. This is like the only the third time I talked to somebody that was on Married with Children. I love the show. Right. So Larry Hankin, who's been like a million things. He was the guy that was selling the couches when Kelly's boyfriend burnt it.
Yeah, sure.
It's such a, that show I think was so ahead of its time. I don't know if it would make it today, but that's cool.
It would be different today, but it certainly did push boundaries and it.
I just had a daughter. She's young. She's only 11 months, but I joke with my wife all the time. Congrats. I'm like, thank you. When there's that boyfriend that comes over, I plan on Al Bundying him out the door, hitting every piece on the way out. And then God, that show was so good. So then after that, you're on a bunch of, you have a bunch of like guest spots at the same time. You're still doing the improv.
Well, still doing the improv. What happened is I'd say our group, we didn't all move at the exact same time. Over about 6 months, we ended up all here together. And I was here for just a couple months and I just started doing commercials right away, which back in the 90s, they paid really well. And suddenly I was just making more money than I ever thought was possible in life. And with that came confidence. And so then when I started getting auditions for theatrical stuff, like Married with Children, it was like, I felt good. I felt confident. And you know, they're always looking for young people in Hollywood because not everyone has the experience or confidence and I had it. So started working guest star spots and lots of commercials.
What were some of the commercials that you did?
Oh man. I mean, I tried to add them up one time just to like, how many did I do? And it's like over 150 of them.
Wow.
I was a spokesperson for Whataburger, which is a Southern burger chain, for 2 years. That was cool. I went to Venice, Italy to shoot a week on a Kodak commercial.
Wow.
Coors Light, Honda, IBM, Kia. I mean, it just goes a huge list. I just, whatever had the right look for, you know, dorky guy that you kind of like. And that worked in the 90s for sure.
I know obviously social media wasn't around back then, but were you getting letters from like people you went to high school or grew up with? Like, hey, I just saw you in this Coors Light commercial, man.
No, I wasn't getting letters, but you know, when I'd go back home to Alabama and people would be like, dude, you're on TV, man. I was like, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So then you're doing the commercials. You're still doing some guest spots like Just Shoot Me, Clueless.
Yep.
And then in 2000, a serious strip mall. What was that like landing like a show that you knew that was obviously it was signed on for obviously a set number of episodes. What was that like landing something like that?
That was crazy. I had done some pilots before that were, you know, in Hollywood, they shoot a pilot and if people like the pilot, then they turn it into a series. So I had done some network pilots, but none of them went on to be made into series. So then I got this and, it was super cool. It was Comedy Central, which was awesome. And I was like probably the second lead. And Julie Brown, the show's about a strip mall and about all the malls in there. And the girl, Julie Brown, was her show. She created it. But then there was this super young part of the cast too. I think they were trying to figure out a way is how can Julie Brown get on TV on Comedy Central, which skews really young. And I think brilliantly she went, I'll write my storylines and then I'll put in these, you know, 20-year-olds to have their storylines and we'll all merge together, which was really smart on her part. So, it was super cool to be able to, you know, I'd never been on a series like that before. I remember it was incredibly low paying compared to what the network, stuff was paying. Before you do a pilot, you have to sign a contract that says exactly what you're going to make per episode. So you sign that. And this Comedy Central show paid me a tenth of what I was going to get on these, some of these other shows.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still being on TV. So I was super psyched by it.
I wonder if that's gotta be something. So were there any of the pilots that you shot that, like, were there some people that you worked with that were like big names or any concepts?
So I did there was one I did with Melanie Griffith was the star, and Jeffrey Tambor was her boss, and I played Jeffrey Tambor's assistant. That was called Me and George, I think. So that didn't go, but that was like probably the biggest, like CBS, you know.
How does that not
big
get
budget? When it's bad.
Oh, it was bad.
yeah. I mean, sometimes it's the writing, sometimes it's the acting. I mean, yeah, they every time they make one of these pilots, they go out to malls in the Midwest and they say to regular people, "Hey, come on in this room. We'll give you $100." And then they make them watch it. And then they go, "Was it good?" And if they say no, the show doesn't get made.
Oh man.
So yeah. And then there were different pilots over the year. You know, there were some, the House Full of Honkies, that improv group I was in, we did a couple pilots. One for ABC was a hidden camera show. And then one was for a competitive improv match called You Bet Your Honky. And those came real close to getting made, but you know, real close isn't good enough. So,
oh man, that'd have been awesome.
Didn't go forward.
So you're able to do the hidden camera show. Was it like, just like in public with like random people, like something like that?
It was, it was the same kind of stuff that you see on hidden camera. I mean, we were a little more tame because like now you can like, you know, what you turn on TV and they're like throwing, you know, a severed bull's head into someone's lap and making them scream. And yeah, back then you couldn't do that, but I'd go into Kinko's. I remember one of the bits I was in Kinko's, which was, might not be around anymore. It's a copy store.
Yeah. FedEx, I don't know. Kinko's. I think FedEx bought him.
FedEx. Yeah. I went in and I said, I'm doing a project in medical school and I need to make a Xerox, copy of my butt, my naked butt. And they're like, "No, you can't do that." And I was like, "Oh, but it's really important. It's for a test. I need a good, clean Xerox." And they're like, no, you can't do that." So then one of my partners distracted them, and I jumped up on the machine, dropped trowel, and put my butthole right up on the glass and made a copy of it. And they called the police. And then the police came, and I'm hiding off in this production van. And so the executive producer goes, hey, "You're officer. I'm sorry. I'm producing the show. We this is a hidden camera. I apologize. You to talk to me, I take responsibility." And the cop's like, "No, I want the guy whose butthole is on this paper." So it was like a mini manhunt. They said, "Well, he went home, officer." It was crazy. They never got me. So I don't know what the charge would have been. Illegal.
Thank God they didn't take all you and your buddies and do like a lineup.
Yeah, exactly. Which butthole did you see on the copier?
Oh my God. God, that's amazing. So yeah. So then like right after, you know, strip mall, which I'm sure was such a cool experience, even though, you know, you gotta think you're able to work with some pretty good people. Tim Bagley. He's great.
Tim was amazing.
Oh, dude, he's great in everything he's in. So then Wayne Brady had his series.
So yeah, so then Wayne got his variety show, and we had just started touring together, doing a two-person Whose Line style show. So that's right after Wayne got Whose Line. We started touring, which we still tour, by the way. We've still been doing that for, almost 20 years.
Wow.
And because of his success on Whose Line and because of the success of his, you know, touring and stuff, he got this variety show. And, you know, he's not just a comedian. He sings and dances. So he wanted to combine all that stuff. And it turned out pretty good. You know, 9/11 happened after about 10 episodes in, and people just didn't want that kind of goofy variety. That's why I'm thinking that it just didn't work. The ratings were fine until right after that. And then it was like, the whole country was bummed out, and it was not a good time for silly comedy.
Yeah, no, I know. There's stories about like a few movies that came out around that time too, like the same kind of that bombed because of it. But no.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then right after that, Drew Carey show.
Yeah. So, I had been, I'm trying to remember how I, I'm just trying to remember how it all came together. So I met Drew briefly with Wayne when he was on Who's Line. I auditioned a bunch for Who's Line around that time and couldn't get on. I was always, the way they did those auditions is they'd bring in 150 people, narrow it down to 75, narrow it down to half, until there were only four left. And I'd make it to the final four every time, but almost never did anyone in that final four get hired. So it was really weird. It was like you'd make it to the end and then only rarely would someone get picked from the four to be on the show. But I kept auditioning for it and met Drew. And then I just had an audition for the Drew Carey show. And they're like, yeah, this is a recurring character. And I went in, did real well, got it. And then became really good friends with Drew after that. Still am.
That's so awesome. And then just having that security, obviously you had some of the, I don't know if you, were you still doing commercials up until this point too?
Yeah. Still doing all, yeah, everything. I was, and still, I still am, I do anything anyone asks
good
to do.
So you got to do.
Yes.
You have a family. Yeah. You got to make sure.
But yeah. Yeah, no, I do. I do. I mean, I'm in a financial place where I don't have to do everything if I didn't want to. But what am I going to do? I'm just going to sit around on my ass and play video games. It's like, I'd rather just be out doing something, right?
No, definitely. New experiences. You never know what can open up another avenue.
Yeah. So did about 20 episodes of that. And one of my favorite things about that show is I came in the last two seasons. And if you remember the Drew Carey show, like his whole workplace shifted.
Yeah.
So Craig Ferguson, who played his boss, left. And myself and this other guy, Kyle Howard, became his new like internet startup bosses. And so it was an internet startup set. And in it, there were 10 computers in the center of the set. Well, our prop guy, Skip, hooked them all up together. So during every single break we had, and after tapings and before tapings, all of us would sit there and play Call of Duty multiplayer for hours and hours and hours. And it felt like the taping of the Drew Carey show was a side event to us playing Call of Duty. and then we challenged ER, the TV show ER. They were also at Warner Brothers. And we challenged them to a Call of Duty multiplayer battle, and we beat their asses.
That is cool.
Yeah. So,
What kind of people from ER played? Was it any of the big name people?
I'm trying to remember if Noah Wiley played. He may have. It was, you know, it was basically just whoever wanted to play. So there were some cast members and there was some crew people and there was a producer too. So, but man, that was so much fun.
That's awesome. I talked to a guy he's a puppeteer and he was on the show Dinosaurs. He operated the daughter. So he was telling me, he said, I had this funny story about softball and he said they were playing, Dinosaurs was playing coach. And so I joked and I said, oh, with Craig T. Nelson playing? He's like, no. It was more usually like the cameraman in the background people. But he's like, you know that really tall guy? I forget his name now. Ox?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, for some reason he would always show up. He was like the big, the ringer that would show up. But that's pretty cool you're able to play them. Now, those 2 years you were there, was it any of the live ones or?
Yeah, we did do one of the live ones when I was there.
Oh, cool.
Which was kind of scary. It was neat though. It was fun.
Was that the first time you ever did like live TV up until this point?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. I can't imagine what else I'd done that would have been live. You know, around that time too, I got to go all the way to the final audition for Saturday Night Live.
Oh my God.
So I was flown to New York. I was put in a hotel. You go on the actual stage where they shoot the monologue.
Yeah.
And they film it like it's the opening monologue and there's four people at a desk and you do your stuff. And that year there were five of us went up and they hired two. They hired Fred Armiston and they hired who's MacGruber? What's his name?
Oh, Will Forte?
Yeah, they hired Will Forte.
Wait, who else auditioned that year? I heard it was, did Paul Scheer audition?
Not that year. That year it was those two that got it. Myself, a guy from Whose Line named Jeff Davis. He's one of the regulars on Whose Line. And then, a guy named Patrick. I'm trying to remember his last name. He's an improviser from L.A.
I think it might have been the year before because Paul Scheer, they said they did an audition and it was a lot of improvisers. And maybe it wasn't Fred Armisen that got it that year, but they said they wanted to see people work as a team. And they said the whole time Fred Armisen during their warm up, he was doing not what you do in improv. He was basically just showcasing himself and just breaking into characters.
So what happens is that probably was that year. But what happens is before you get to that final thing where it's you and five guys and girls, there were no girls actually, which was weird. Before you get to that, there's all these other levels of auditions where you're in New York and they'll pair you off with people. I got to skip all that because I had just done Wayne Brady's variety show, and Bernie Brillstein, who was Wayne's manager and executive producer on that, is also the dude that, you know, helped Lorne Michaels start SNL. So I got to skip all of the preliminary rounds and go right to the finale. But I saw Fred's audition. He was really damn funny. I saw Will's audition, who I think Will is brilliant, and I think he's super funny, but I saw his audition. I didn't think it was that good.
Oh, but, you're able to watch them? Or are you just peering in the back? Or
no, I realized halfway into it, you could turn on the monitor in the little room they put you in and watch. So watch the live feed. And I was like, I don't really get Will's. I don't really understand what he's doing. It's not really working. But I know they had wanted him for a while. And he was a working writer at the time. So he had a great gig. So, it all worked out.
Yeah, I know. That would definitely
That's a segue to, have I ever performed live before? It was like that, that was me almost getting a chance to perform live.
Oh man, that would have been,
yeah.
Did you ever think about the next year going back, or then after that, you're just,
well, it's like once you've, my thing as an improv guy isn't really sketch comedy. You know, you had to show up with five different characters and three impressions. I don't do any impressions. One of my impressions was, I said, okay, I'm going to do my impressions of William Shatner, of Robert De Niro, and of Quentin Tarantino. And then I do a pirate character with a pirate voice talking about stuff that they'd talk about. And then I stop and go, I should mention that I do them all as if they were doing pirates. just this silly, and it got a laugh, I would find ways to skirt around not being able to do impressions and not being able to do characters. So I was funny. I just couldn't, I wasn't great at, here's four completely different characters with catchphrases and all that. That's not really, really my skill set.
Yeah. So are you able to get that tape? Do you have that somewhere or no?
No, I don't have it. I think they keep them. Boy, I would love to see it.
Yeah, they were showing at the SNL 40th. They showed some people that you didn't even know audition, like Kevin Hart. So they were showing clips of people that audition over the years. Oh, no, I'm sure it's somewhere.
Oh, wow.
It's got to be so awkward, especially you said there's four people there. I've watched a bunch of them that you can find online, like Phil Hartman's. And it's just even though he is killing it, it's awkward because you only hear one person or two people laughing. It's weird.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of weird. And there's rumors that they tell the writers not to laugh, but I don't think that's true. I think they just want to see, they see so many people all the time. So it's hard. I mean, you gotta be super funny to be on SNL and be a writer there. So they see lots of comedy and they can, even now when I look at something funny that's super funny, I'll go, oh, that's pretty funny. But I won't I don't always laugh out loud, but I go, oh yeah, that's super funny. So that's probably what they're doing. Oh yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. So then right after that, I'm guessing that's right after Drew Carey around that time, 2004, 2005.
Yep.
So then you have some roles on some shows, Half Hour, News Hour.
That was crazy. That was, that was, Fox News wanted to do a version of The Daily Show. And I didn't know what it was. I went and auditioned for it. I did the character and I said, yeah, I'll do it. And people are like, what are you doing? Fox News is the devil. I'm just like, I am working. I am making money for my family to feed my babies. Yes. You can vote the way you want to vote. I will vote. This has nothing to do with my personal politics. It's a gig and it's comedy. So go to hell. A couple friends did not like that. They thought I should have said no. But I said yes, because that's what I do.
Yeah. It's funny, when you look at IMDb, you never see something negative, but I guess somebody hacked into it. It says Fox News' failed attempt to create their own daily show. It says that on there.
It does say that. My view of that show is that there were parts of it that were funny. And I don't let politics get involved in any of my entertainment stuff. You know, I do vote, but politics should be in the background of our lives. I don't want to be thinking about it every damn day. So I thought that show, even though I might not have agreed with the comedy they were doing, I thought it was cutting edge comedy because nobody was making fun of Obama. And I thought, here's someone that is actually trying to do that. And that's ballsy. And anyone that's ballsy, good for you. That's cutting edge. And everyone's like, no, it's not. It's hack partisan. Like, no one's making fun of Obama. This is a chance to make fun of the power structure, no matter if it's left or right. So my friends didn't like that either.
No, it's true. It's everything has comedy into it, you know?
Yeah.
So then one thing that I think is really cool, just now just talking to you for the last like 30 minutes and, you know, where you started and like how you did this thing in Disney for a couple months and where you're at today. So there were things before this, but it's only a few years later. So how did it come about that you were going to be on that game show? I can't think of the name. I just had it written.
Let's make a deal.
Yeah, let's make a deal. So did you watch that growing up at all?
I did not. I remember watching The Price is Right a bunch when I was sick home from school. I don't remember. Let's make a deal. But I mean, I'd heard the phrase before. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a game show, right? Wayne got the pilot for it. It's 11 years ago now. And on the original show, I guess the announcer occasionally would goof around with the host, Monty Hall. Jay Stewart was his name. And so they wanted to have a funny person, someone that could, you know, be funny. And they asked Wayne, you know, who do you want to be your sidekick? He's like, oh, John. So they called me and said, come meet with everyone at CBS. And I did. And I was like, you know, I've never announced anything before. I don't really have that, you know, pretty sounding, you know, it's a new car voice. So I'll do it. Sure, I'll do it. I kept thinking every day they'd be like, yeah, but because Wayne and I had such a good, you know, working relationship, and we've been pals for so many years, it just, the chemistry just really worked for the show. So it's been going on 11 years now. And it's, I mean, the original version was Monty Hall telling people, you know, do you want this envelope? Do you want this box? And that was just kind of basically it, just back and forth. And so Wayne has turned this one into like a variety show. He sings and dances. We'll improvise songs together. It's like a little mini Who's Line sometimes. We do everything we can in our power to make it not a game show.
It's so cool. If you think about it, like, it, you know, you're able to go to work with your buddy every day. And when I saw how many episodes, because I know it's like The Price is Right, it's on every, you know, pretty much every day. 804 episodes. Is that, that's
no, it's more than that. That's
it's even more than that.
Is incorrect. Yeah.
Oh,
we just hit 1900 this year.
What?
So we've done 1900 1 hour episodes. Let's make a deal. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. But the best thing about that show, and it's the reason, two amazing things. The reason that I keep doing it, and I'm sure Wayne does too. First of all, they tell us we can say anything we want. Do not edit yourself for daytime television. Just talk like you would normally do. And so we'll often drop an F-bomb or make a really off-color mom joke or sometimes horrible stuff. Sometimes Wayne will just sing these songs about things he has done to my mother. Horrible, horrible rated R stuff. And they just cut it out. But they want us to feel like we can do whatever we want. And they'll just cut it out. That way we don't feel like while we're performing that we're oh, I can't say this, I can't say that. So that's amazing. And then the other amazing thing is we do the whole thing in 4 months. So we shoot all the episodes in 4 months, which gives Wayne and myself 8 months to go do a movie or go do a bunch of TV shows or go write a screenplay. So we have a lot of free time to work on other stuff, which is awesome.
That's awesome. How many do you film in a day? There's got to be.
We do 3 a day, and we do it 4 days a week for about 4 months. Yeah.
That is awesome. And just the fact you can work with your buddy, that's like,
oh yeah,
amazing.
Oh, it's so great. It's so great. And it's weird too, because we've grown up together. Like, we were teenagers in Orlando. We moved out here. He got married. I got married. He had a kid. I had a kid. You know, we watched our kids grow up. Now our kids are in high school. And so it's like all these milestones of life. My favorite part of performing with him is when we go on the road, and we're, you know, I'd say 20 weekends a year, we're out across the country, sometimes Australia, Europe, just doing a 2-person Who's Line show, which is a blast.
So that's really cool. So one thing that on here, you do some writing too. Now, do you write scripts?
Yes.
Obviously, I've talked to a bunch of writers, and I could say to them, oh, you haven't had anything in 10 years. And they're like, no, I'm writing every day. Just nothing.
Oh yeah. No, it's so many, right? I have a lot of like full-time writer friends, and they make a living writing things that never get made. It's insane. Yeah. They make a great living and none of it gets made. Occasionally stuff does. But yeah, I do write. I wrote on Wayne's variety show. I've written for the Disney Channel. I've written for a couple different, live projects. And I have a bunch of screenplays and sitcoms that I've taken out and pitched and trying to get things made. There's one right now I'm trying to produce that my friend Aaron Shore wrote that I love, called White Racist Zombies. Zombie apocalypse. Yeah. That, happens in Los Angeles, but the only white people turn into zombies because of the way the virus works. And instead of craving brains, they crave melanin. So they're eating all the black folks. So Wayne Brady and Aaron Shore are behind that. And we're trying to get that made right now.
Which I see. There's a photo on there of it. Did you guys do some test photos?
Yeah. We shot a trailer. We shot a 3-minute trailer to help get interest and raise funding for it. So
Phil Lamar, Gary Anthony Williams in the photo.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne. That's pretty awesome.
Yes. It was a blast. I hope we can make that soon.
So is that the best way that you've seen, like, to get something made, shoot a trailer, and then bring that to like a pitch meeting with you?
I don't think that's the best. I mean, there's so many different ways.
I'm sure. Yeah.
It's all super impossible. Right. but I have the amazing fortune of having this day job 4 months a year so that I don't have to stress out about, oh my God, if this doesn't happen, where am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? So, it's nice to have that in your back pocket.
Oh yeah. I just think it's so cool that you go to a comedy sports. Do you remember why you went? Was it just like somebody was like, hey, check this thing out? Or you just saw it like in a paper?
I'm trying to remember. I think someone just said, hey, let's go see a comedy show. I was like, yeah, okay. Sure.
It's so crazy.
I'm glad I said, yeah.
Like these little moments that can just change everything. And then look where you're at today.
Yep.
And the one sequel on here, I'll talk for a couple minutes and I'll let you go. Thanks so much for taking the time. So how'd you get into like doing voice acting? Because I see, so Pup Star, you're in a couple of those movies.
So I auditioned for, there's this one company. I think it's called Airbud Entertainment. And this guy, Robert, I'm his last name, but he has this proprietary technology of talking animals. It works really well. And he used to work for like Disney. And then he said, I don't need Disney. I can do this on my own. So he goes off and he just makes these family animal talking movies over and over and over again. And I did one called Monkey Up for him, where I actually played the dad of a family, not a voiceover, just on camera. And then there was this talking monkey was what the main character was. So from that, he goes, hey, why don't you come do voiceover on with some of these animals? And so that was Pup Star. And then there's been a couple sequels. And so I played the kind of the Ryan Seacrest type character in that, which is super fun. I haven't had a lot of getting in the voiceover business is its own like separate world. You'd think it's similar to, you know, acting on camera and stuff. It's not. It's very different. It's different people. There's different gatekeepers, and you really have to commit to that in a way if you want to do that. If you get famous being, you know, super famous being on camera, then they ask you to be in these animated movies, no problem. But to just go do that, I've had very little success with even having opportunities for that. So having this guy just ask me to do a part was amazing. My hope was that now that I've done these four movies as, you know, different voices, that now maybe I can, you know, approach other movies and do some voices. And nope, it's still almost impossible for me to get any opportunities in that realm. But it's all good.
Yeah, well, I know with some of these movies, you're never in the same room with some of the people in the cast. But I interviewed Josh Flitter, who was in one of the movies with you. He played Ruff. Better Together. We interviewed him for. He played Ace Ventura Jr. in a Cartoon Network movie, but he's from Jersey, and I talked to him a couple months ago. But now that's cool. Yeah, I hear that from other people that just like when they do voiceover, like that's like the realm they're kind of not pigeonholed in, but that's like what they have to do. I talked to a guy that when they rebooted Johnny Quest, he was the voice of Haji.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So what are some things that over the years that might have obviously you're in so many great things. You had a chance to improv on TV. You get to do it all the time with your buddy. Is there any shows that you were on that you love playing, maybe different type of roles? Like I saw you were on, you had an episode, you had like a small part on like an ER.
Yeah. So ER was great. I played a medical student. So that was a drama, but it was kind of a comedy part in a drama. I always, whenever I book a drama, I think, yes, I finally have a drama. And then I realized, no, I'm kind of the comedy in the drama. So I did a Chicago Med this year, but guy that, what could be funny about a guy that's having panic attacks and needs brain surgery? nothing. But of course, yeah, it was because I did the read at the rehearsal with Oliver Platt and the director, and they both laughed. And I go, oh shit, I'm blowing it. They're laughing. And I go, oh no. And the director goes, no. He goes, you're supposed to be funny. He goes, the other storyline's really dark. So you're the guy that's having a panic attack during brain surgery. It's supposed to be a little bit funny. And I go, damn, I just can't, get a drama. But then I actually did get a drama. So just this year, there's a movie that we're actually looking for distribution now called A Patient Man. You can follow it on Instagram at A Patient Man, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'll do.
And I play, it's kind of a Hitchcockian thing. And I play, there's not one funny moment in the whole thing. I'm proud to say. My first, not a single comedy beat in it, project I've done. So I'm happy about that.
Were you able to see like the final cut yet?
Yeah, I have. We just played at the Austin Film Festival and did really well. So hopefully it'll be either, you know, have a small release or, you know, be available soon on Netflix or Amazon or iTunes, something like that.
That'll be cool. Now you're going to be, watch, it's going to change everything, just like going to comedy sports. And now you're just going to be like a drama, serious actor.
I'll take it.
That's awesome, man. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure. Let me just throw out that people can follow me on Twitter at Mangum1 or on Instagram at JMangum1 or on Facebook. And then also there's a fun little character, little animated character that I write and do the voice for called Cooters News, and that's on Facebook at Cooters News for a little two minute Southern comedy segments that I enjoy doing.
So can you still do, you did it before, but when did you lose your accent or did you have one?
I did have one and I use willpower and voodoo to make it go away. But when I have a couple drinks and just start loosening up and talking like I used to.
Did your family know that you've had too many? Like, oh no, he's doing it. Yeah. He's got the twang.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They do.
That's awesome, man. Well, thanks so much, Jonathan.
Hey, great talking to you. Good luck with the podcast and look forward to hearing more stuff from you, man.
Man, wasn't Jonathan awesome. The fact that he gets to tour, work with his buddy,
And they essentially, all their families grow, you know, their kids are growing up together. I just love that you see that. People don't forget, you know, who they came up with. The fact that Wayne was like, oh no, I want Jonathan. Jonathan's my guy. And then the fact that they're able to do what they want and improvise on a game show, which doesn't really happen. It's usually just cut and dry. This is what we're doing. And they're able to have fun with it. So don't forget, I'll put all of his links. So follow Jonathan. He's amazing. And also check out a patient man and have fun playing you jokes. It's a blast. Me and my wife do it every time he does it. So thanks again, Jonathan. And don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast. Follow us on all social media at Sequels Only. And don't forget to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.